This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. This past Wednesday would have been Trayvon Martin's 19th birthday. Trayvon Martin was shot and killed by George Zimmerman 2 years ago this month, and although Zimmerman was acquitted, he remains in the public eye. Most recently, Zimmerman announced that he will fight in a celebrity boxing match in March, and rapper DMX has offered to take Zimmerman up on the challenge. Some are drawing parallels between this celebrity boxing match and the circus arenas of ancient Rome. Mark Anthony Neal is a professor of African American studies at Duke University and the producer of the podcast Left of Black, and he joins us now. Welcome, Mark. Good to have you here. Good to have you here. Mary Tolley Boatwright is a professor of classical studies at Duke University. Tolley, good to have you here as well.
Thank you for having me.
And Naimea Clark is a professor of communications at Elon University. Naimea, welcome.
Hi, Frank.
Let me start with you. Tell us about your first thoughts, Naimea, when you heard this.
Oh, I was trying not to fall out of my chair. I thought, how dare anyone try to make money on this? But I'm a media economics professor, and I understand there is money to be made here. I can't imagine anyone paying money to see this.
But they will, and you and you're a communications scholar. You also know why, right?
Oh, sure. You know, people are drawn to oddity and to celebrity, although it is painful to call George Zimmerman a celebrity. But and so people will pay money to see it because it is odd. And there also is a feeling of wanting to see George Zimmerman get punished. But I don't think that the correct form of punishment is DMX.
No, well, Naim, I appreciate your thoughts. Mark, what do you think about this? What were your first thoughts?
You know, it's a kind of event that I think we have a heightened sense of now because of social media. And my immediate reaction when I heard about it is like, you know, these folks need to miss me with this.
Right.
You know, that to give any kind of attention to it is to give it more credence than it deserves, even in a kind of response to it. And I think the immediate thing you do is find the money trail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's willing to put up money for this? Who will benefit financially from that? And you start to go at that particular angle, particularly in terms of sponsors who might get involved. Color of Change, for instance, with Rashid Robinson, have been trying to do some things, as they have been for a long time, particularly in terms of shoot first laws. You know, so it was a natural correlation for them to kind of step into this, particularly as Trayvon Martin being kind of the symbolic shadow of this conversation. You know, DMX on some very real level is an example of the crisis of mental health in this country. And I'm not being funny, right, in any real sense, but this is someone who clearly has struggled around mental health issues for a long time. And so, you know, if we can use this moment to actually talk about that issue, you know, issues of depression within the black community, particularly amongst black men, then I find some value in this. But the idea that somehow we're going to get some comeuppance, you know, by seeing, you know, George Zimmerman be put on his butt, you know, George Zimmerman will have his day with his God at some point.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, George Zimmerman claims that this was his idea, too. So he apparently sort of wanted to be publicly
promoted. I mean, clearly, I mean, yeah. You know, as Naima just said, you know, in what way really is George Zimmerman a celebrity? So he's really trying to cash in on whatever 5 minutes of whatever this is, you know, that he has left.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, Naima. Clearly, if you follow the money, it's pretty clear what the capitalist impulse is, right? You can make a lot of money on this, so let's just do it. But then the point is, a lot of people who aren't going to make any money on this are going to watch.
Right.
And they're going to watch out of some sense of what? Revenge, some sense of spectacle. I mean, what's going on here in terms of the public's thirst for this kind of material?
You know, it's interesting. I think there's a couple of things. I think, first, George Zimmerman has obviously become notorious, because I refuse to use the word celebrity, but he's become notorious for being violent and aggressive with his girlfriends, with his wife, and you know, with Trayvon Martin. And so to ask or to expect for him to make money in this way, sort of making a spectacle out of his violent tendencies, I think is shocking. But that is how we know him, and people will be interested in seeing that. But again, I think that this curiosity to see, well, now George Zimmerman's going to be punished by a black male for being aggressive and violent toward a black male, that notion is there are some people who are interested in that and who do want to see that. But then there also is this other thread running in my mind as someone who watches a lot of television and really gets the media that this is all going to be produced. It's not going to be an actual boxing match. It's going to be somewhat staged. And so really, is DMX going to be sort of, is he going to win, quote unquote, because that's the way it is set up? And perhaps George Zimmerman has a role in that, saying, this could actually help establish me even more as a celebrity if I am beaten by an African-American male. But again, I don't think DMX is the judge and jury here, and I don't think that that will make anyone feel better about what happened to Trayvon Martin.
Well, and DMX has his own history of violence and has actually made a career of this, Mark. So, talk about this in terms of a mediated experience, a produced experience. I mean, those songs, the videos, those may come out of a history and a past and a reflection of something that's going on, but they're also very self-conscious.
I mean, contemporary black masculinity is all about the spectacle, you know, whether or not we're talking about Kanye or Jay-Z and Beyonce at the Grammy Awards. So he perfectly fits into this, right? And in the same way that George Zimmerman is making a money grab, DMX is also. And when's the last time DMX has made a recording? You know, in what way is he relevant in any conversation except from some sort of nostalgic, historic sense in terms of hip-hop? So this gives him some credibility and even may give him some cover within the black community. For those folks invested in notions of black respectability, you know, DMX has been marginalized in a very real sense. In his mind, he might think this is a chance for him to get back into the good graces of somebody again because he put George Zimmerman on his butt.
You don't think the biography that Dr. Phil did of him that's available on YouTube was the thing that put him back on the map?
No. I also am curious, you know, in this arena to then root for DMX is to really root for a collapsed individual, someone who is not a great example of the African-American community. And so, but in this case, we're going to, I hope that he, if this happens, I hope that he wins. But, I just think to root for DMX when he is clearly in collapse is problematic as well.
Well, and to root for the very kind of extra legal violence that started this whole thing, which is, and you use the word arena, and Tali, that brings you into the question, because this question of bread and circuses, the fact that we love distractions we have a criminal justice system that is utterly broken, utterly disfavors those people of color and poor people. There is nothing in the statistics that can indicate anything other than a totally unjust criminal justice system, and we're looking at a boxing match. This goes back to at least ancient Rome. Tell us about it.
Yes. There's a couple of things that are interesting there. One is that the marginalization of everyone in the arena, all the gladiators, were people who were slaves, or if they had actually volunteered, they were free people who had volunteered to serve in the arena to be a gladiator. They got cachet personally, but then they were also deemed legally slaves. So one of the things that happens with these spectacles in which a man would be pitted against another man is that both are marginalized and both are seen as not the spectators. The spectators are unified looking at them, and they can make the decision, because this becomes something that is common, that the spectators make the decision, should they live, should they die. But the spectators are completely separate from the gladiators, who are objectified.
And this is the exercise of their democracy. We understand it's a less, even on paper, robust system than we have. But here's how we exercise democracy and become civil participants. Yes or no, kill or live.
Yes. And there's a satirist, Juvenal, who's writing about 100 A.D. And he is maybe the Stephen Colbert, but much nastier than Stephen Colbert ever could be, I think. And it's from Juvenal that we get this phrase, bread and circuses, because he says, here is the Roman people who used to be the ones electing commanders to put legions on the ground, and now all they care about are bread and circuses, their entertainment. So it's a way to divert attention from the real problems that we have, the fact that people are unemployed, that, you know, whatever it might be, that is, there's so many complicating factors for this celebrity match and the people involved in it, but they're not going to be solved by us watching this. and cheering for one side or the other, and maybe even thinking that there's some justice that is gained, because there won't be. Both these people have been objectified.
I mean, that's one of the places where social media is wonderful. It is really concerns me, you know, at least in terms of the experiences of black folks in this country and around the issue of race. You know, there's this daily dynamic of microaggressions, you know, that we've managed for 300 years have created even great comedy out of these microaggressions. But in the era of social media, these microaggressions become much larger issues than they are. And what they do is distract us from the real kind of response to structural issues. You know, folks will be far more willing to engage Zimmerman and DMX in this fight than they ever would be to actually get engaged in a struggle around their school board, around stop and frisk policies. You know, that's the easy way out. It makes them feel good when DMX, you know, quote unquote, wins this. But again, these structural issues never get addressed. And that's where you wonder whether or not this stuff is even planned in a much more significant kind of way as this kind of form of distraction. It's Black History Month. Folks, Trayvon's birthday just occurred. It'll be the anniversary of the shooting. Let's actually divert attention away from real structural work to challenge what's going on in terms of criminal justice system. Instead, you know, let's get people caught up in this boxing match.
Naima, mm-hmm. Your thoughts on that? Because, again, yeah. You can look at the power structure and why they have a deep vested interest. Only very few people really benefit by this criminal justice system. And the rest of us are one way or another victims, and yet here we are watching a boxing match. Yeah. Why do we do it?
Well, you know, in a way, it is so insulting because I think that what you're saying is exactly right, that there is this – well, it's easier just to watch this boxing match. But at the same time, the promoters are discounting that people are thinking and that people do have real anger that can only truly be solved by actually changing the laws. And while there is very little money in having those kinds of discussions, it could be worthwhile to see a debate on television with intelligent, interesting people talking about these issues. And again, the public is brought to the lowest common denominator by, here, you'll take this, you'll watch this, and we will. But if someone is brave enough to say, let's do something else, let's give the audience more of a challenge, the audience can handle that. Instead of insulting us with the bread and circus.
How about a debate where we keep score and the loser is slain?
Well, now that could be entertaining.
I'm just trying to think it through here. Tali, tell us about the kind of extra legal status you pointed to it of the gladiators and also their celebrity status. I mean, who were these gladiators?
Well, we hear about their celebrity status through things such as graffiti in Pompeii, where there are graffiti on the walls by women, supposedly, but maybe by men as well, saying, oh, I'm sighing for this gladiator who is, and he's named. So that we have that kind of, and then gladiators had their own tombstones. They are extra legal, but they could maybe have a family. It was kind of winked upon. And then they also have this other funny status, odd status, in that they're despised because they are in the arena, they're fighting to the death, but yet they're so courageous because they are they're at the edge every day. They're either going to die or kill. And they have a kind of courage that is that people like. I guess that's why people watch boxing. I can't.
A freedom. Either.
A freedom.
Yeah. Well, that's it. So they don't have they've got this vague and ambiguous legal status. They're outside the legal framework, but they're allowed to have social status,
yeah.
Right? So it's if you're outside the legal framework, if you're not recognized or marginalized by the law, here's one way at least the greater society will recognize you. But the other thing is these values, because one of the things Juvenal complained about in his vicious satire it was that we're losing our virtues as Romans. And those all were wrapped up in courage and the yeah. willingness to fight and die. Yeah. And so if that was true, then this spectacle would at least encourage us to believe, yes, we haven't lost our stuff. But of course, I'm sitting here, you know, eating elephant chips, and the folks in the arena are doing the dying. Right?
Yeah.
Mark? Yeah. So it didn't stop there 2,000 years ago. I mean, particularly in American culture, we have glorified, have we not, outlaws. I mean, if you think of you know, Jesse James and Bonnie and Clyde, that's certainly a long history in the United States. And more recently, we've been able to commodify kind of villains, people who have done bad things.
You know, I think about the success and the popularity of the site World Star Hip Hop, you know, which just creates these images of some of the most vicious stuff that could ever be kind of commodified in free access in terms of social media. And, you know, it goes back to exactly what Tally's talking about in terms of the Roman Empire. And particularly it gets contextualized around folks who are marginalized and around race. You know, folks who don't, as you mentioned, have any real social status. And so even black folks who are classed a certain kind of way, right, get some sort of pleasure out of consuming these images of other marginalized black folks going at each other. And I think that's part of the investment in even this idea of the Zimmerman DMX boxing match, you know, as Naima suggested, because that's where DMX is also.
I also am curious about this notion of, you know how parents will say, have you no shame? Where is the shame in this? I think that George Zimmerman, I obviously don't know him, but it seems at some point, somewhere in his mind, there has to be a moment to say, yes, I'll make money off of this, but where is my common sense? Where is my sense of shame and decency to say, I'm not going to do this to the Martin family. I'm not going to further continue this conversation that I have created. I, again, I'm hoping maybe I'm being too idealistic, but where is the shame? And I think that is what we are missing. I think that, you know, Amy Fisher, after she shot Mary Jo Buttafuoco, she briefly did adult films. Again, where is the shame in that?
Well, let me just pose this as a possible answer and see what you all think. That in a society where more and more people, white and black, are becoming marginalized and outside of the system and outside of any power framework, notoriety and fame is your only hope. And identifying with famous people or notorious people is some piece of the rock that otherwise this system will not deliver. How about that?
Well, one thing I think about often with the Roman Empire is that this was a system, a political system that had such inequities. Mm. And for instance, you could only get into the ruling groups. There were less than 4% of the entire population. And yet, they didn't have riots every day. They had very few. So there's a kind of I think that the entertainment, the providing of entertainment acts, I mean, it's a little bit as a social valve. And why isn't there, well, there's.
I mean, in a way that you can't discount. You know, for instance, the legalization of marijuana in several states, right, where you have folks just really literally cooled out.
Yeah.
Right. You know, they're less likely to be reactive to what's happening in terms of how the state is dealing with their humanity.
And I'd be happy to have a state, a nation where 3% of the population actually had some power. But we're down to 1.
Right? Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I want to thank you all for being on the program today. Niyama, let me get your name right, will you?
Naima.
Naima Clark is a professor of communications at Elon University. Mary Tolly Boatwright is a professor of classical studies. Mark Anthony Neal, professor of African and African American studies at Duke, and the producer of Left of Black, a podcast that you can find online. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, live music from Morning Brigade. Please stay tuned.